This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn, Roshan and Shaoning. 7:18 in the morning, Friday the 18th of December. And in about half an hour, we're going to be speaking with Azrul Mohamed Khalib of the Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy on what challenges Malaysia might face in distributing the COVID-19 vaccine. But in the meantime, let's turn our attention to the high-speed rail. And that's the plan that connects Kuala Lumpur to Singapore originally, and it might see the light of day, but notably without the participation of our neighbour down south, Singapore.
Yes, and we're actually asking a poll on Twitter right now. Should the high-speed rail project proceed? 25%, 24% say yes, 32% say not without Singapore, and 39% say no, too costly. And according to a Malaysian Insight report, a source disclosed that the project will continue with the track ending in Johor. Responding to this, a Singapore Ministry of Transport spokesperson emphasized that both countries are still in discussions and that any details will be further communicated by both prime ministers as stated in their December 2nd joint statement.
So the project's been delayed twice now at Malaysia's request, first in 2018 under Pakatan Harapan and the second when Perikatan Nasional came to power this year and asked for a final December 31st, 2020 extension. And that's coming up quite soon, in fact. Now, so the question is, of course, is the HSR project still a viable plan if the very reason for its existence, which was to connect KL and Singapore in the space of 90 minutes, is now off the table? To help us with this conversation, we have on the line Dr. Francis Hutchinson, Senior Fellow at IC's Yusof Ishak Institute. He's a frequent commentator on the HSR project. Thank you for joining us this morning, Francis. So there is no official announcement yet, and this report's based on sources, but if Singapore does opt out of the deal, do you think going ahead with a rail project that no longer connects to Singapore is a good decision on Malaysia's part?
So, good morning. Thanks for the invitation. So, you are correct that there have not been official announcements that anybody is pulling out. And as you mentioned, just recently, the Ministry of Transport in Singapore issued in a press statement that it was committed to the high-speed rail. And if you look at the sort of history of the development of the project, it has been long, particularly from 2013 onwards. You know, both governments have really put in a lot of effort and talk to iron out the technical details. So I think we can see that there's, you know, been a lot of political capital as well as economic capital in preparing some aspects of the projects. So as long as the initial design is maintained, certainly I don't see Singapore pulling out. Now, turning to your second question, whether it would be a good idea to proceed with the project without Singapore, I think that that's a very interesting question. So if we go back to the initial design of the project, you know, it really is about connecting two metropolitan centers with quite large populations. You have about 8 million in Greater KL, you have about 6 million in Singapore, and this is one of the most heavily transited air routes in the world. We also know that the causeway is heavily used at overcapacity. So there's real demand for travel services. And then you get a lot of benefits of, you know, shortening the travel time between these two urban centers to 90 minutes, down from 4 to 5 hours. And this would, of course, improve productivity and allow demand for new services to develop. And also, there's an important component that is due to the structure of the project. Most of the works, and here we're talking about civil engineering for tunnels and bridges, can be carried out by local firms. And there are 335 kilometers worth of works that need to be done in Malaysia. So with this as a base over time on the Malaysian side, there was a discussion about building intermediate stops between the two centers, you know, in places like Putrajaya, Seremban, Ayer Krow, Muar, and Batu Pahat. And if we go from the experience in Japan, you know, this is a great way. You see intermediate stops along high-speed rail routes developing very quickly. So this is a nice way of spreading out, you know, economic development. So if you don't have Singapore included, you would lose the benefits of, you know, reducing the load on the causeway, as well as potentially unleashing demand for Malaysian goods and services from a large urban center with high levels of buying power. So you would still have the connections between these other two urban centers, but I'm not sure that you would have the populations and the buying power for it to be commercially viable. And I'm also not sure that you need an expensive high-speed rail for this. So perhaps the best way of looking at it is, you know, you have the Singapore KL part as the main aspect of the project, and the domestic connections are a great additional benefit. But if you turn it on its head, it doesn't work so well.
Francis, when we take a look at some of the arguments that the funds here could be used for other projects to better improve Malaysians, like as you mentioned here, the current rail network, right, or just the overall public transport system in general, why do you think the government is pressing on with this project despite these setbacks? I know you've made some clear arguments here as to the stimulus impacts here, but it's beyond why else? It seems like there are so many hurdles in the way.
Sure. So, I mean, I guess the first question, part of your question, is about whether, you know, it has merit. Mm. And I do think it has merit in the sense that improving railway transport as well as public transportation more widely is, I think, a good thing. And I think it's definitely, you know, worth trying to get more people out of cars into other modes of transport. And even things like, you know, we know that the ridership of public transport in areas such as KL is actually lower now than it was in the 1970s. And you also know that Malaysia has a long focus on promoting private ownership of cars. So certainly I would think that there would be some investments here that could be redirected to promoting more efficient public transport more widely. Second, actually, if you look at the way that Malaysia is planning, it actually is thinking this way. If you look at documents like the National Physical Plan, it's actually all about moving away from road transport to rail transport. And inspired by rail network developments in Japan and Europe, you know, they're very ambitious initiatives for urban development where train networks connect urban centers and are themselves important urban amenities, bringing together public facilities, hotels, and residential accommodation. So it's not just about the transport aspect, but there's also an important urban redevelopment aspect. And third, if you specifically want to look at infrastructure, I would argue, and here this is my personal opinion, of course, that the ECRL is actually a project that needs further scrutiny because it doesn't connect very populated parts of the country and is unlikely to be commercially viable.
So there have been previous reports as well about Malaysia's suggestion to have the HSR connect directly to KL, which was an idea rejected by Singapore. These are, of course, source reports, as Singapore reportedly saw it as a threat to the aviation industry. I mean, what concerns do you think Singapore might have with this deal that would determine whether they stay or go? And what might be reasons that Singapore is not participating?
So I think that this is actually a second or a third order question. I think that there are other things that you need to look at before you arrive to the destination that you have. So I think you need to look at the context and the process first. So the context is that the project is about connecting two large urban centers in a quick way that would alleviate road transport and would unleash buying power for goods and services and also increase productivity by reducing travel time. So the process is that this idea was first put forward at the official level in the Economic Transformation Program in 2010. And then you had official buy-in at the highest level from both countries from 2013 onwards. And when you follow the negotiations, they have really been super meticulous and seeking to address the different concerns that both countries have at every step of the way, from where the terminus in KL and Singapore will be, to how the customs and quarantine facilities will be structured, to how the direct train line between KL and Singapore will be articulated with the domestic service that will stop in other, you know, other urban centers, how the tendering process will work. So it's been very hard and very detailed. So when you look at, you know, the sort of trajectory of the discussions, there has been no mention of KLIA. So I think the question is, rather than, you know, what does KLIA say or do or how does it change things, I think the question is, if these are new permutations that are being raised now, why are they being raised now so close to the deadline of December the 31st?
Thanks very much for speaking with us this morning, Francis. That was Dr. Francis Hutchinson, Senior Fellow at the IC's Yusof Ishak Institute, raising some very pertinent questions, honestly, about some of the, as he calls it, the new permutations that we've seen from out of this HSR project. Shaoning, what were some of your thoughts just listening to Francis's conversation?
Well, for me, ultimately, it's about the economic benefit, right? So you want a multiplier effect, but we're talking about huge sums of money to complete the project. I think estimates are as much as 65 billion ringgit. Now, if it doesn't go to Singapore, would there be any point? What's the reason why we're doing this high-speed rail is to have the connection between these two large cities. And if you stop in Johor, why not just improve on the existing train line, which is much cheaper, much easier?
Yeah, so this is something that we will be watching very closely. Right now, though, we are heading into the 7:30 news bulletin. And up next, speaking with Brock Silvers, CIO of Kaiyuan Capital, on the potential delisting of Chinese companies in the US. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.